Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 27th of November, recording at 7:46 p.m. in that Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights of the last week, this being the Friday Big Picture Long-Term Outlook Audio. And, well, for stock markets, we've seen them roiled. They were quiet for the most part up until this Dubai news broke, and then there was the concern over Greece and some of the other European Union's more indebted countries. And so that's created quite a bit of turbulence in stock markets. That's not a euphemism for a big sell-off, because it hasn't all been one way. For instance, we did have a big sell-off in Asia today, with Hong Kong. That had one of the bigger declines, down 4.84%. But the European stock markets, which were all down pretty well on average of at least 3% yesterday, and bounced back. Okay, they regained a little less than half of those declines, but nonetheless, no rout. Wall Street closed down, but less than 2%, sort of 1.5% to 1.7% on the indices. And the Central and South American indices that I can see were up today. This is a shortened trading day, incidentally, in New York due to the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Now, elsewhere, long-dated government bonds have been steady all week, and the U.S. dollar has had a decent week in reversing some earlier losses. In other words, it had weakened sharply on Wednesday, but then bounced back on Thursday and Friday into its ranges. The yen has been much too strong, in my opinion, for what the Japanese economy can bear, but it's got a tiny bit of respite here today, having been very strong in the earlier hours. Precious metals fell sharply early today, but recovered much of those losses. Gold, for instance, recovering two-thirds of its decline, got down to $11.38, so that's a little less than $60, and off the actual high that we had seen in gold bullion, and is closed in here today at $11.77. If it is closed, it might be some. Yes, I think it is, or it might be a little bit of after hours trading. So not a massive sell-off in the precious metals here today. The industrial metals, again, sold off sharply. All the commodities sold off sharply and rebounded. And generally, that was the experience in stock markets. Weakness early on in Europe and in the USA, but then closing well off those lows. Okay, so what's going on here in terms of the big picture overall? Well, market complacency, to the extent that there was any market complacency, has certainly been shaken by the credit concerns this week. And that's not surprising, particularly as stock markets were still in what we have been describing daily as a corrective phase. Now, they've been pretty steady, most of them. The majors, that is, have been pretty steady. The one exception to that has been Japan, which has been underperforming here for months. And Japan, for instance, its indices have all broken below their still rising 200-day moving averages. But it's not a pretty picture technically, and it's not difficult to see why. Japan is an export nation, and its currency is just, as I've said before on a number of occasions, its currency is just way too strong. So far, Japan seems unwilling or unable to actually weaken the yen. But in my view, that's what it needs, at least, is to offer some short-term respite, and that would certainly help the stock market. But most of the other stock markets, now I'm talking about Wall Street. I'm talking about most of Asia, most of emerging Asia, and I'm talking about continental Europe. These and then also Central and South America. Most of these stock markets are really quite steady overall. So their reversion to the mean process has been more in the form of ranging activity rather than a spike back downwards towards the rising MAs. Now, I think a few months ago I wouldn't have been surprised if we had seen some sharp spikes down towards the moving averages. One did that. One market did that, and that was China. That's really mostly an exception overall. So what I'm trying to say here is that during this corrective phase, which has, of course, embraced the anniversary of last year's meltdown, the technical action has been reasonably steady overall. Now, why might that be the case? And there's one overwhelming answer to that. It's the liquidity that central banks have provided with the biggest monetary reflation in the history of the world, and there's no hyperbole in that description. And that monetary reflation is still largely in place, although interest rates have edged up a little bit in some areas. And there's lots of talk about how it can't go on forever. No, it can't go on forever. But it's still largely in place. So that has helped the stock markets to steady. Now, what about this black swan, or potential black swan, as I described Dubai yesterday? And I'd been mentioning that we would need to see a sort of a black swan event, I thought, to cause a much sharper reaction in stock markets without any insight that Dubai was going to dominate the front pages of newspapers starting yesterday. Now, I was somewhat bemused this morning to spend a few minutes in front of a financial channel and see various experts saying, well, come on, this was as obvious could be, talking about Dubai's vanity properties, and everybody knew they were in big trouble. Well, sure, there was a kerfuffle over this last June. That's really quite some time ago, but I was not aware of anybody talking about Dubai earlier in the week before the announcement on Thursday, and I don't think there was any talk about that, at least not in the Western market environments, or not outside the Middle East. Middle Eastern markets were underperforming, so they probably had more insights on this. But it did catch the markets by surprise. The evidence of that is in the sharp reactions that it did trigger. Now, is this going to be contained, as we would hope, or is it going to cause a domino effect among emerging markets? And people have worried in the last few days about Vietnam and its devaluation of the dong, and people have been worrying for a while about some of the weaker Eastern European stock markets. But I think the answer is, in all candor, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to play out, but we can arrive at some important conclusions, I trust. And that is, for once, the United States is not at the epicenter of a global financial crisis, or the latest financial crisis. That's important. So this is largely centered in the Middle East. A small, if we talk about other markets that people have worried about this week, a small and very emerging Asian market, and a small European country as well. We already have favorable monetary conditions in place in all of these regions. So I don't see this as a massive sort of escalating crisis. The best case though, with Dubai, and I think that's the most important of these developments. We have Western banks involved, as I'm sure you realize. But the best case result is that the UAE works this out, and with Dubai, I would assume, losing a little bit of control or clout in terms of its lenders. That's the best case scenario by far, in which case then the world will swiftly move on in a week or two, and it'll all be forgotten in the year-end Christmas rally. That's the best case. The worst case is that people will play an extensive what next game, and that investors will lose their nerve and come out of the so-called risk assets, in which case we would see an extended sell-off in global stock markets. We would see an extended sell-off in commodities, and that would weigh on precious metals as well. And we would see a further rally in the US dollar. It hasn't had much of a rally yet, but it's been mostly ranging recently. And we would see further strength in long-dated government bond prices. Now, I think the answer will be somewhere between the best case scenario, in that the Dubai situation is completely sorted out in the UAE region, maybe with a little bit of help from the Saudis, and a minor extension of the corrective phase downward, a minor downward extension of the corrective phase that we have seen, and that might weigh a little bit more sharply on the higher beta emerging markets than on developed country markets. So there was clearly a collective sigh of relief in Europe and Wall Street that they were not at the epicenter of these problems. So that's my hunch, but as I said in all candor a few minutes ago, I really don't know how this is going to play out, and I'm content to watch it. I must say that when I saw precious metals down quite sharply, and I was in the office quite late last night and got in later this morning, but when I saw the size of the sell-off, I was reaching for my buying button, and then I held back because I will be away for a few days next week on conferences. And I thought, well, you know, I don't need to have the distraction of this. I can watch and wait and either come in on a little bit of further weakness if that's what occurs, or pay up for these metals. My hunch is I'll wind up paying up for the precious metals, and I won't be too upset about that. The shakeout that we've seen, I think, has certainly triggered a lot of stops in here today. If I hadn't sold my silver yesterday, I would have been stopped out of most of my positions, incidentally, but most of my platinum positions would have survived the stops that had a lesser reaction. It's not as volatile as silver is, and I probably will regret that I didn't come in and buy a bit of silver, a bit of gold when I had a chance to in the sort of 1140 to 1150 region. But overall, I do feel that provided we don't get the worst case scenario of a domino effect, and again, I think that's probably no more than a 25% chance, and provided we don't get that, then I would argue that these developments are favorable for precious metals. One of the key things here is that gold, as we know and say and read often, is that gold is no one else's liability, unlike some of these debt markets and the equity markets. So that's an attractive alternative. The only reason gold is going to go down is if people sell it because they actually can sell it and they want to lock in the profit because they're traumatized by some of the weakness that's occurring elsewhere. But my hunch is that gold will remain a relative performer over both the short and the medium term, if not an absolute performer in this environment. And technically, a bit further consolidation by gold, which had run ahead of the other precious metals, a bit further consolidation would do it no harm whatsoever, and would actually set bullion up for another run into the new year period and throughout much of the first quarter, as I suspect. So my best guess is to say that this is a mini crisis in here. Now, are there other dominoes to tumble? Possibly, because the world economy has been through quite a considerable shock, and it's also been on the most intensive form of life support in terms of the quantitative easing. And one can make the argument, indeed I will make the argument, that had it not been for all the intensive care in terms of record levels of monetary stimulus, the quantitative easing, printing of money, that the global economy would be in much, much worse shape today. Is there an inflationary kicker in the pipeline as a consequence of all this reflation? Absolutely. Absolutely, but that's not a problem today. I have been saying for some time that we could already see, I've seen for a number of months, that we could already see where the pockets of inflation were going to appear, and the charts tell us that, the markets tell us that, and we could see that it was in stock market recoveries and in commodity market recoveries. But neither of those have been so strong that I would classify them as bubbles, and that includes gold, which I wrote about in response to the excellent piece that came from the Weekly View, which posed the question in its headline: "Is gold a bubble?" And concluded, "Probably, but it will go higher." I feel that before this secular bull market in gold ends, that we will almost certainly see a return to gold fever. Now, that's a guess on my part, but I think there is some analysis behind it. Now, we did have that 21-year bear market in gold, and we are, 9 years into this recovery. Gold we know that the inflation-adjusted arguments for gold, although I'm always a little bit wary of those when say, well, people say, well, if you look at the 1980 peak, it should be at 2000 and whatever level. Other people say, well, that's CPI inflation, it should be much higher than that. I'm wary of the argument of taking what definitely was a bubble in gold at the time, that move up to 800 or a little bit more back in January of 1980, and saying that gold should be back up there on an inflated adjusted basis. That would require another big bubble peak. And will we get that? I think we probably will, but I wouldn't hold my breath for that. What I think is much more likely to happen is that we will see a continuation of the replay of the moves that we have seen following previous breakouts of 18-month trading ranges, and the breakouts occurring in September 2005 and September 2007 and September 2009. It's really incredible, this high, very, very individual pattern. You won't find many other markets conforming to those numbers, but remarkably consistent within itself, and that sometimes happens with charts. And that suggests that following this consolidation, the somewhat overdue consolidation for gold, that we will see it move up to at least 1300. And why the at least 1300? Because I'm looking at the gains that we had seen following the breakouts in 2005 and 2007. We had moves upwards of approximately $300 in the price of gold. And therefore, I would expect at least that and more if we get equal percentage moves, and more if there's a bit more of a bandwagon effect, as I would expect eventually, if not in the next few months, because if this is a secular bull market, and I think the evidence is very strong that it is, what's behind this secular bull market is not so much fear of inflation or the Armageddon story that people sometimes say is the only reason one should hold gold, but it is just the realization that gold is being remonetized in the eyes of investors. In other words, more and more investors want the what they perceive as the comparative safety of gold in a volatile and sometimes unstable world. So they worry about the future inflation impact on long-dated government bond yields because it's likely to push them higher. They worry about credit problems and the impact that that may actually have on some equities in a very competitive global environment. They worry about property bubbles, and what's happened in Dubai will certainly remind them again that property is risky. But again, as I said earlier in this broadcast, gold is nobody else's liability. So that's compelling. Meanwhile, crude oil has pulled back a little bit further. It's well off its lows, got down to 72.39, dipping into that support area that I've referred to below current levels or near current levels, closing at 76 here today. A bullish chart overall, but nice and quiet, and that's good. My biggest concern, as you know, is the next spike in the price of crude oil, and that's not something that's happening at the moment, and I'm grateful for that. Well, interesting week, and I, for one, will selfishly hope for quiet days during the Monday through Wednesday period when I will be least able to participate. Meanwhile, roll on the weekend, and all the best to all of you.